Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project gives you an opportunity for a half hour, almost, of commentary, analysis, and maybe even some insight into the media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. Sir?
Hi, Rex.
Before he gets a chance to say anything.
You just can't.
Move on.
You just can't.
And Rosemary Armeo, director of the journalism program at the University of Albany.
Hi.
There you go. Hi. Great to see you, Rosemary. And who's the guy at the end again? Dr. Chartok. It's wonderful. Actually, you're here in person, meaning that your busted ankle is healing and you're spry and filled with vim and vinegar.
Well, that's true, Rex, but now I have a new pain in my rear end because I'm here with you.
Oh, my gosh.
Here we go. Pains, we're underway. Bill O'Reilly is out. We really need to talk about this, I guess, because...
Bye-bye, Billy.
Bye-bye, Billy.
Couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
The undisputed king of cable television, felled by allegations of sexual misconduct.
Richly deserved. I don't know why it didn't happen when they booted out Roger Ailes earlier in this investigation. It was evident what was going on then. It took an article in the New York Times detailing secret payments to a multitude of women. And in fact, charges continue to come in. What I find interesting is the response by the media to his ouster, which has been, in some cases, mournful. Oh, he's such a giant in the business, and now he's gone.
Really?
Huh. Yeah.
Not
Good Morning Joe is just unbelievable.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
I don't know. Oh, you mean
judgment.
The real media?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the New York Times, which
You're
helped
about the
do
fake
this.
Media.
Yeah.
No, yeah. But I was interested in a couple aspects of this. I picked up the paper as we speak, the Daily News and the New York Post. The New York Post, owned, of course, by Murdoch, was, sort of namby-pamby about the whole thing. But the Daily News, who, hates him, obviously, just ripped them apart.
Took O'Reilly apart
O'Reilly,
or Fox apart?
O'Reilly apart, yeah. Uh-huh.
And, well, that might balance Fox, which didn't cover this at all.
Right.
Major media news, major scandal, not covered at all.
So there are two questions. One...
Three questions, at least, or maybe four.
Anyway, one question is, does it really make any difference? Because now, while it is true that it was the number one cable news show on television, it made about $178 million in ad revenues
Amazing.
In 2015, and it's gained viewers.
They could have paid out wronged women for many more years.
They could
with
have.
That kind of
absolutely.
Budget.
Absolutely. So, so they're substituting Tucker Carlson in his place.
Ick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me just amplify on what Rosemary said. Ick, ick.
Yeah. That's the thing. Is this going to be a financial loss, or is it such that, this guy is 67 years old. Now we know that that's a youngster, absolutely, by some folks' account. But that matches the Fox audience, which is basically made up of, it'd be like Alan Chartok minus the PhD and being Jewish. It's old white guys. And so it's a, I can't see him behind the microphone there.
I can just see the man.
What did you say about me, George?
But it is. The Fox News audience is older people, heavily male, a lot of it across the middle of America, though,
sure.
That's...
Skews nicely with Trump supporters.
It does. And so it may be that this audience is shifting away anyhow.
I don't think so. I don't think so, no. I think what's happened here is that Rosemary's on point. The advertisers were deserting in droves. But I read in one of the tabs this morning, as we speak, that it was the wives of the Murdoch boys who insisted that he go. Isn't that interesting how You're always talking about male chauvinism and everything, Rosemary. But in the end, women really do influence us. I know that Rex doesn't fool around when Marion tells him something, and I sure don't when Roselle tells me something. I do what I'm told.
Well, I would love to believe this is true, but I really don't think that it is. I think that it's the age of Rupert Murdoch. That's the real crucial issue here. If Murdoch were in his prime, if he were even 5 years younger than he is an old man right now. I mean, even by your standards, Alan.
You wouldn't know it by all his wives.
Including the latest one, model Jerry Hall. But I think he conceded to his sons, who are of a modern age. And this kind of behavior is no longer acceptable. And to their wives, perhaps, too. It's not acceptable. But clearly, it was a financial decision.
Why, how do you think that this behavior is no longer acceptable? Because there were three powerful men who had allegations of sexual misconduct against them last year. Two of them now have lost their jobs. The other one
is president of the United States. Yes, I am aware of that. Except that he is still answering for it. There's a massive resistance against him, in large part because of his treatment of women.
Well, you know, it didn't seem to stop anything in the election, number one, these allegations. Number two, a lot of women voted for Donald Trump.
Repent.
Well, that's a classic intellectual argument.
I'm sorry, I don't get the argument why any woman would vote for Donald Trump.
You may not get it, but from a, well, we political scientists would say, from an empirical point of view, there's no question that that's exactly what happened.
I don't dispute that, Esther. I think it's a tragedy.
What is interesting, though, is whether this hurts the Fox brand. I think that's why Rupert Murdoch's sons decided that he had to go. You know what is the best brand in cable news? The Weather Channel. That is a new survey that's just come out.
Just the facts, sir.
You know, in part due to the negative perceptions that came out of the 2016 election, clearly, that has damaged all of the major news brands, CNN, Fox, MSNBC. But the Weather Channel is flying high.
But how many people listen or watch? That's the question. See, if I were the Murdoch boys or Papa Murdoch, I would have taken somebody a little less bland than Tucker Carlson. I would have taken somebody like one of these screaming guys, you know, from the radio.
I think that Fox is in a rebuilding stage. It isn't, don't forget, just their top earner, O'Reilly, that they have booted out, but Ailes, even Greta Van Susteren has left. I think they're going to rebuild, and they're definitely going to go skew to a younger audience with a view to those demographics we mentioned earlier. This, in the short term, is good news, I think, for MSNBC, which has a very strong stable right now. Rachel Maddow has been rising. Greta Van Susteren is now at MSNBC. Chris Hayes is, I think he's really good. Joy Reid is strong. They have a strong lineup.
Well, I'm so sorry to disagree once more, Rosemary.
Do you watch any of these before you disagree with me?
Well, some. I actually do watch.
Get the empirical evidence.
Speaking of which, I know that MSNBC is generally the third. Fox is first, CNN is second. So no matter what your personal proclivities are, Rosemary, I doubt that you are correct that, you know, they have a strong stable that are making people watch.
But it's rising. I think that is the point, that it is on an incline while Fox is not. And who knows what might happen. Actually, the clearing of the way of this huge talent, this huge ratings behemoth that is Bill O'Reilly, could well usher in a new era. We don't know what kind of talent might emerge, what audiences will coalesce around different hosts.
Let me just say that you and Rosemary, as very good, wonderful pundits on this issue, you know, you're speaking from your hearts, and you're talking about what you would like. I, the political scientist, am speaking empirically, as I mentioned before, and I think I know what's happening.
Well, then,
gave you the raspberry.
By the way, we're trying to teach our grandson, who is
not
three,
to do that.
Not to do that. When we say
no, do it more to your grandfather.
Bad example for children yet again, Rosemary. What do you know? Now, back on that brand survey that just came out, by the way, among TV networks, actually, as opposed to cable channels, PBS is, of course, ahead of the commercial networks, CBS
and ABC. Against them.
You know, and meanwhile, for news service brands, you know what's number one?
News service brands.
News service,
brands.
Yeah. Who provides news services to other entities?
Think here.
NPR.
Public radio.
NPR is number one, followed by the BBC, then Google News. That's odd, isn't it? Reuters, Yahoo News, and then the New York Times.
Wow.
Interesting in terms of the brand preference of consumers all across the country.
Rex, sorry for interrupting, but one of the things that I think happens with people when they're taking surveys is they think not only of what they really think, but they think of what they're supposed to say.
Uh-huh.
So don't you see, you could say, you know, what's best? Well, PBS is best and NPR is best.
It seems like New York Times would be higher if that were what is happening.
No, because New York Times, I believe, has become a terrific investigative journalist with a particular point of view. I do think so.
I do think, though, that this is a national survey, so you're getting a lot of the pushback from the Trump voters around the country whenever you have the name New York Times.
I'm surprised Huffington Post doesn't figure either. That's gotten...
Probably not big enough. Well, it's not a news service.
The definition is...
Yeah, news service. That's providing content to others. Anyway...
Well, we didn't see Associated Press up there, did we?
I didn't see the Associated Press listed there. Isn't that surprising?
Wow. My students in journalism school hardly know what it is.
Is that right?
Yeah. You can't say AP. You have to explain
it. The biggest news organization in the world. Isn't that something? And, you know, we all rely so heavily upon the AP to fill in whatever is going on.
Places where we aren't.
Where we aren't, absolutely. So...
remember the days when there was AP and UP...
UPI.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
UPI. I worked for them.
Did you?
A million years ago, yeah.
You know, in Latin American countries, when UPI had a bureau, people thought that the name of it was UPI, and so it's pronounced OOPI. I just thought that was humorous, that a guy would pick up the phone in a serious news organization and say, OOPI.
And that's the difference between you and me. You thought that was funny.
Let's have another story about Fire Island instead. Anyway.
Oh, no, you brought it up this time, Rex. Darn.
Oh, what can you do? Anyway, this is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Rosemary Armeo from UAlbany, Dr. Alan Chartok from WAMC, and I'm Rex Smith from the Times Union. So talking about the White House, we need to make note of the fact that yet again, there is another way in which public access to information is being curtailed. The White House logs are now going to be secret. We will not know who visits the White House. Visitors, big and small. Do we know the names of who came to the Easter egg roll? I don't even think we know that.
No, but we know from pictures they were all white.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting observation.
This from a president who was promising, as I think I remember it, the most transparent administration in history.
Right. And he could easily look better than the previous administration, which he constantly tries to best, because Obama's record on transparency is not great. I have knocked him multiple times for that. But this seems almost gratuitous. The way the law is written and the way it was enforced under Obama was that if you really did have someone you didn't want the press to know about, you had an excuse. You could exempt them under litigation, under national security. It wasn't a blanket, everybody comes in the door, we have to know about. Sean Spicer now is saying, well, no other president had it before. True. And Obama put it in a fake way. He hid the people he wanted. Yet he won't even do that. He's going to hide everybody.
So the president who vowed to drain the swamp during his campaign
has opened the front door to the swamp creatures.
Absolutely. Any lobbyist can come and go at the White House and we will never know.
Here's what I don't know. Can you sit someplace in Washington from a vantage point with like a telescopic lens and look at the front door and the back door and know who's going in? Can the media find this out on their own?
Well, it's interesting because MSNBC and CNN, I believe, both have mounted cameras that show the White House 24/7. So it's interesting that you say that, but I think they have their ways, don't you?
Oh, sure.
I suppose.
Foreign journalists have been extremely helpful in figuring out what's going on in Mar-a-Lago and the White House.
What was that great movie that alleged that there was like an underground passageway out of the American President?
The American President,
yeah.
Yes.
I like that flip.
Yeah. Well, there's an interesting story out of Palm Beach where the gossip columnist for the Palm Beach Post has turned into now a major White House watcher, equivalent to Kremlin watcher, because she has known Trump for decades when he was just, you know, another billionaire playboy. And so she gets entree frequently into Mar-a-Lago. She is there on all these major news events from which the legitimate press is, she's legit a press. I didn't mean it that way. Political press has been excluded.
But Rosemary, when they got all teed off, when Trump got teed off at her at some story, he wrote her a letter, a note, and I think these are the right words. He called her a big fat something slob. And she responded to him and said, I'll accept that, but not the slob.
Right. So the Palm Beach Daily News is what she writes for. It's not the Palm Beach Post.
Oh, I'm sorry.
She writes for the shiny sheet, as they call it.
Uh-huh,
isn't that something?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because there is the Palm Beach Post, which is a reputable newspaper, and then there is this little twice weekly, the Palm Beach Daily News, because it's printed on kind of slick paper, they call it the shiny sheet. And it's never been a reputable newspaper. newspaper, but Shannon Donnelly. She's a woman in her 60s, originally from Newport, Rhode Island, of course, don't you know, is the one who seems to be picking up on all of these people who are seeing POTUS and who's showing up at Mar-a-Lago. How cool is that?
That is extremely cool. And then they actually now are taking a look at some of her writing, which is extremely colorful. It's not the sort of dry fare you get from political reporters.
Or as the song goes, and the pig got up and slowly walked away. You can tell a man who's boozing by the company he's choosing. And the pig got up and slowly walked away. See? But the important...
You just never know where it's going to go when you're on a program with him. You just never know.
It's poetry. It's marvelous.
But the important point here is, here's Trump, and he has very interesting friends. He has her. He has O'Reilly, right? Mm-hmm. There's O'Reilly, who said he's a good man and he didn't do anything wrong.
And should not have settled. Love that. Just one more point about O'Reilly. It annoys me that he keeps saying and is allowed to say, these are completely unsubstantiated. It's disheartening. I have to go because of untrue claims.
Yeah, he says. If everybody thought they were untrue, do we have any sense that Fox would have axed him? Of course not.
Why would they have paid out money? They paid out $13 million. That's a drop in the bucket to what he brings in. But.
And they had a do we know what the amount is that they're paying him?
To go away?
Yeah.
We don't know that.
We don't know that yet.
It's going to be a lot.
Yeah. I would suspect so. Ailes got $40 million.
And they had signed a contract with him, so that'll mean something.
So we turn to international affairs, since sitting here in a studio in Albany, we know so much about that. Just being sarcastic. It's all right. Two things that are worth noting here. One, specifically about performance of the press with regard to North Korea. The Trump administration announced that it was sending the aircraft carrier USS Carl Vinson and its escort ships to the Sea of Japan as a warning to North Korea. Problem is, of course, at that very moment, the USS Carl Vinson was steaming the other way.
Details.
What's the media issue here?
The media issue is whether we were lazy, that we took the word of one source and went with it and then speculated on what that carrier group steaming up towards Korea really meant. And I've thought about this, and I don't think it was lazy. I think if your one source in the story is the commander-in-chief, there is no better source. I would have gone with the one-source story.
I would have, too, and I agree with you. There are people are bemoaning, the media not getting it right, but there are certain things that you can only depend upon a source for. There was a similar situation, I think, some years ago when there was a mine collapse in West Virginia. And the governor went before the microphones at about 4 a.m. one night and said, I'm sorry to report that the miners are dead. I think there were maybe a dozen miners underground at the time. It turned out they were not. And the media were attacked for having reported that the miners were dead. The families were furious at the news media for reporting that it was dead. But what are you supposed to do when somebody who is ostensibly the authoritative source tells you something?
Gabby Gifford was another case. When she was shot, her staff in Washington and her staff on the ground in Arizona where this happened both reported that she had died of her wounds. And her husband found out that his wife was dead listening to news reports. And of course, it wasn't true. She's still alive and pretty brave. And reporters then took a lot of guff about getting it wrong. But that is reporting. I mean, you have to evaluate your sources and then report what you know and fix it when some other information comes out. It seems to me that the real fault here is, what the heck was the president doing? Why is he talking about deployments anyway? In the press, that's one area that even I don't say we need to have access to. That is private. So he puts it out there.
He
tells a lie. Yeah. What happens the next time he says anything about what we're doing militarily? That's when we're going to see if the press is doing its job, because we ought not to believe it next time. We ought to be checking with the Pentagon. And why did the Pentagon correct it? When you've got military officials on TV the next day assuring the American public that they really do know where all their ships are in the world, that is not a good thing. And the other thing that makes me crazy is...
Well, wait a second. But they know, Rosemary, where the ships are.
And yet they
disassembled.
They fed to this lie.
Well, it's the president making the lie, and he's getting political credit for it. He's already seen that his polls go up when he does something audacious like that.
I hope we'll talk about that.
That,
it's just outrageous.
Is exactly a great question about how the media has responded to this notion of...
The tough guy.
Right. Is there sufficient questioning? Are we sufficiently
skeptical.
Skeptical is the word.
There's Fareed Zakaria, no Trump supporter, gushing over this strong move. And Brian Williams, the liar who's trying to make his comeback, saying, wow, he's become the president now. And it is unseemly. What did we learn from Iraq except that this is the time when the press needs to be most skeptical and ask the most questions about what's going on? And we're not. We're just saying, yay, yay, the bomb is so huge, biggest in the world in non-combat, all that stuff. Awful.
Let us note the fact that of the top 100 U.S. newspapers, 47 ran editorials on the Syrian airstrikes the week that they occurred, and only one was opposed to that military attack. That, by the way, is the Houston Chronicle, which is owned by my company, Hearst. And the opinion pages editor there is my predecessor in this job, Jeff Cohen.
Good job, Jeff.
But 8 of the top 10 newspapers by circulation, by print circulation, wrote editorials supporting the Syria air attacks. It's kind of a remarkable display. By the way, we did not. The Times Union's editorial raised the question about what's
the point? I mean, as it's come out later, that strike was kind of silly. It did not hurt the airfield that was targeted. The Russians and the Syrians were warned ahead of time. It did not take out any chemical warfare equipment or supplies. It was just a big spectacle.
And it's always been so in American history. That's the thing, you know, as the New Lost City Ramblers sang many years ago.
Brace.
It was all about that battleship of Maine at war with that great country, Spain. See that, and there's more to it, but I think that's enough.
Because the next verse probably brings in the founder of my company, Mr. Hearst. I mean, you talk about somebody supporting military force and the appearance of toughness. That was what that was all about, and it may well have led to the Spanish-American War. But there is a grand history, of course, of using international affairs as propaganda to build domestic political support. And there's some question as to where exactly. That was a great movie.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
You know, and anyway, the photos of Syria's dead children, there's a question about that, that the president says that he was moved to intercede to bomb in Syria, violating what had been the, you know, sort of tenet of his foreign policy, that which was hands off, America first. He was moved to do that by pictures of children. So the question that is kind of raised is the use of those photos and the display of them basically a form of propaganda? Is this an effort to bolster, to give the president cover for pursuing a foreign policy that will build him domestic support?
Well, the press is guilty of the same thing. We use pictures of children dying of starvation to stimulate food aid to places in Africa and Asia. And this is the same. What's ironic is, are the pictures having any effect? How about the little Turkish boy dead on a beach because refugees would not be admitted into Europe? That didn't help refugees much. Or the children dug out of the bombing in Aleppo and shown on TV, heartbreaking, rending scenes, did nothing to make the United States stop Russia and Syria and bombing. They're losing their effect.
You wonder if the president might have noticed any of those photos.
Yes, one might have.
And of course, we heard once again back to the influence of spouses, that the reason the president moved so precipitously was because Ivanka told him.
Well, she's not actually a spouse. That's
well, she's
number
a daughter.
One.
You see, they're relatives.
And there is some.
Her.
There actually is. We have a listener at WAMC who's been writing in consistently that we are wrong about this, that there's no evidence that she really is the one who did this.
Well, somehow it got out there and it got
I know. I'm trying to track that down. I think that's pretty interesting.
Very interesting. Finally, just a little bit closer to home, thoughts about Mayor Bill de Blasio of New York City.
Wow,
a guy who is raising questions because he's not taking any. He has all these public appearances and never talks to the press these days.
That works for Rex Tillerson. Maybe he's learning from the big guy.
Well, if the American people despise the press, which polls show that they do, and people don't want to talk to the press, they say, okay, I get it.
I'm so upset by this because it is exactly the behavior of Eastern European powerful people who belittle citizens, including their representatives in the press. And that's exactly what this is. Part of your job as a public servant is to answer to the public, and that means taking reporter questions.
Hear, hear. There's no better place to end the show than that one, I think, this time. Rosemary R. Mayo from UAlbany, Dr. Alan Chartok from WAMC. I'm Rex Smith from the Times Union. With gratitude, which we sometimes fail to mention, to our terrific producer, David Gustina, for putting up with all of this. And to you for joining us on The Media Project. We'll see you next week.
Bless your heart, Rex.
But publishers have worries for publishers.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, professor emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. And Rosemary Armeo is the director of the journalism program at the University at Albany. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.